Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? You're listening to the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. James Coe here. Alex Gelhar, the whiz kid from Wisconsin behind the glass. What's up?
Not too much. A big week here we've got for us at NFL Media.
Oh my gosh, it's a huge week. It's draft week. It's fantasy draft week.
Fantasy draft week.
What's all the goodness that we could find on fantasy
draft? Well, fantasy draft week years ago was an event. The event stopped happening, but we wanted to bring it back on our platform. So we're doing more content. We're going to have new sleeper busts. Marcus Grant wrote a bargains piece you can read right now on NFL.com/fantasy.
Atta baby.
They're periscoping a mock draft, 3 rounds every day from the NFL handle. There's going to be more fantasy hits on Total Access and all across the network and NFL Now. So this is the week, folks, to pay attention and get prepared for your fantasy drafts.
The magical beard of fantasy. Matt Franchise, Franciscovich, what's up?
Hey, James. Glad to be here.
Good. MG, my guy, Marcus Grant, what's going on?
What's going on, James? I feel like we sat next to each other this morning.
We're in the same place. We're in the podcast studio.
Right.
By the way, if you want to watch those episodes of NFL Fantasy Live, it's going to return September 5th to the NFL Network, but full hour per shows of NFL Fantasy Live can be found on the website, NFL.com/fantasy live. We've got the wide receiver prognosticator himself, the pride of West Virginia, the creator of reception perception, Matthew Harmon. What's up?
Oh wow, Matthew. That was so formal. Thanks, man. It's good to be here.
Good.
Yeah, it's exciting. Fantasy draft week. I'm fired up.
All right. There you go. Let's make it happen, shall we? Oh, by the way, like us on Facebook.
Yep.
Facebook.com/NFL Fantasy. Follow us on Twitter, at NFL Fantasy.
We're just trying to make it easy for you guys.
Yes, absolutely. All right, let's get to our top headlines.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Watch the news. Because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife.
All right, our first piece of breaking news, Dateline Culver City. Matt Franciscovich, you got any news to share, pal?
Yeah, I got engaged this
week. There we go. What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing really good. It was awesome.
Okay.
It was a great weekend.
You want to give us a quick story?
Sure.
All right.
So I've been with my fiance now for 6 years.
Gotta change the name.
It is weird.
Oh, it's weird.
It was a tingle when he said fiance.
Drop the F word.
Okay.
So it was about time. We've been living together for a while, and I finally manned up.
Yeah.
Her sister lives in L.A., so she helped me out plan this, and we went up to Griffith Observatory for
beautiful.
A quote-unquote planetarium show that didn't actually exist.
Oh, okay.
she bought in, and we went around the back of the observatory. It's a great view of the city.
Okay.
And we found a spot, and I got down on one knee, and she said yes, and then we had a really nice dinner.
Beautiful.
And it was awesome.
Hey, I got a question for you. Did you ask her father?
Yes, her mother and father.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Good for
that's
you.
Very
like
very
over a year ago now.
Over a year ago?
Yeah.
I'm sure they're sitting around like when is it?
Because
what is this going
on? I don't see them very much in person, so I knew when I saw them they were out here visiting that I had to get that in.
Wow.
And it's been
good for you.
You know, time flies. So
I can't believe they kept that under wraps.
They
for
did.
That long.
They
that's
did.
Great.
This is yes.
I can't believe we kept it under wraps. I have been itching to tell Mackenzie since you told us who you were. But no, that is awesome, man.
That is great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
There's also a backstory. You were very shady about how you guys got together, so that's great.
that's for a different podcast.
That is a different podcast. But no, congratulations.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You will be the second married man on this podcast.
All right.
All right, so there you go. No, but really, though, congratulations.
What are the rest of the three of us?
Thank you.
Well, you guys, I don't know.
That's also for a different podcast.
You know, actually, right now, we kind of have, like, a sliding scale of relationship involvement.
Do we?
We've got James,
okay,
you're fully fledged, married with child.
Yep.
Franchise, you're engaged.
Okay.
Yep. Second step. Gelhar is in a weirdly serious relationship.
The nascent stages.
And, you know,
and
Marcus
us.
Is playing the field. You know, he's out there. And then there's me, dead inside and alone.
Dead inside and alone.
So it's like a circle.
Wow.
I wonder if, like, we're going to move. each side of the circle.
By the way, we're going to be talking about the NFC East.
This got awkward.
Not just our feelings.
This got awkward.
We will be talking about the NFC East. Cowboys, Eagles, Giants, Washington, but let's start in Chicago. Jeremy Langford, week two. This is basically our week two takeaways here for the preseason. But Jeremy Langford looked tremendous. You can find all of the week two takeaways, by the way, www.nfl.com/Gelhar, G-E-L-H-A-R, nfl.com/Gelhar. Alex, we'll start with you. Jeremy Langford in Chi-Town. Again, there's been, just not just rumors, but reports. Coaching staff talking about a committee, but, man, Jeremy Langford looked good.
Yeah, and a lot of hand-wringing was around this. You know, people were saying that it was sounding and looking like all four of these guys with Kadeem Carey and Jaquizz Rodgers and Jordan Howard were going to get worked. But
right.
So far, Langford's looked great, and they've been giving him almost all of the reps with the first team. So even if this becomes some sort of committee, you think his dual-threat nature, being a good pass catcher, out of the backfield and showing some burst between the tackles, he'll at least be in the driver's seat, which makes me feel a lot more comfortable of his kind of 7th to 8th round ADP. We just did a mock draft today, and our friend Haitham Kalani stole him a couple picks before me. I was going to take him, actually.
No, I think I took him.
Word.
Did you take him?
I think I took him in the 6th.
Oh, maybe it was you then. I was thinking about
it. I was picking right before Haitham, so
yeah,
that's what it
if
was.
If he gets 60% of this backfield share, is a 6th round grade not just a steal for this guy?
Yeah, that's pretty good, I would say.
I mean, because there's so many backfield shares everywhere. If Langford can pick up, 60% of the backfield touches, golly, man, I feel pretty good about him there.
Yeah,
no?
I think it's a huge steal.
Yeah.
And so I'm writing him up for one of the breakout, spoiler alert, for our draft kit this week.
Boom.
And the funny thing about Langford is, obviously, like, he started out pretty optimistically, like 24th overall in early MFL 10s, and then we know that Mike Clay wrote that really good and scathing piece of Langford, which he brought up a lot of good points about how not good he might be at the whole football thing, but that also doesn't
that seems like a problem,
right? But not necessarily, because that also doesn't necessarily matter, because in the three games that Langford started when Forte was out, he was the running back 4, the running back 1, and the running back 17 in those weeks,
right?
Yeah.
So it's just further proof that the running back position is incredibly opportunity driven,
and we still saw explosive plays even when Matt Forte
came
back.
When Forte came back, Langford had double digit rush attempts in all but one of those games from like week 12 through the rest of the season too. So he was a big part of that backfield. And the other thing, all this talk about a committee, it's like Kadeem Carey and Jaquizz Rodgers are career backups.
Right.
They, in 7 combined seasons as professional football players, they've logged a combined fewer than 400 rush attempts.
Are we driving Langford's price right back up?
Slowly.
I think people are overreacting to this committee talk.
All right. Yeah, get on board, baby. So. Get on board. I've been on board with Jeremy Langford all preseason, man. I'm excited. I hope he gets the opportunity. We've seen the explosive plays. Even going back to his Michigan State days, he was a good, solid running back. And I know some of the advanced analytics maybe say otherwise, but, man, I don't know. You watch this kid play, and he can play. All right, let's go to Tennessee. Tajae Sharpe, man. He has looked – speaking of – he has looked very sharp.
He has.
Oh, I see what you did there.
You got all of the targets.
I see what you did there.
I really like Tajae Sharpe as a player, but I really hate puns. So this is going to be like
Tajae looking sharp.
This is going to be like a conflicting thing for me in terms of how I feel about his success.
All right, you know what, Harmon? You've been talking about Tajae Sharpe. You and Alex have both been talking about Tajae Sharpe ad nauseum here. Give me something that you have really picked up on in terms of his game.
Yeah, so the one thing that I actually said when I wrote up about 21 prospects for their reception perception results on Backyard Banter, I said about Sharp that he and Sterling Shepard had the most advanced route assignments of the prospects, and I thought that would – I actually said in that article, it's funny looking back on it, this could be a guy that sneaks up the depth chart pretty quickly because of that, and sure enough, that's pretty much exactly what's happened. And, if you look at what Sharp does in reception perception, he runs a lot of – good out routes, and he's just a solid overall guy that gets really good separation. He's not an overwhelming athlete. He actually had like weirdly small hands at the East-West Shrine game, but then came
They're
back.
So sure though.
But he can't. Yeah, and then he came back with like bigger hands at the combine. So who the hell really knows
what
that? What his hands grew?
That massaging guys. There, one of the quarterback from Arkansas or whatever had that too. He saw a massage therapist, and his hands grew like a quarter of an inch.
Weird.
I gotta get that done.
That is just
something about that seems shady.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
That's
a little.
Great.
It's a little peculiar, but I think what the, another good thing about Sharp, too, is he moved all around the formation. He had 48% of his sampled snaps in reception perception at right wide receiver, 21 at the left, and 29.5% in the slot. So he's a guy that can play all different positions. This is a yep. wide receiver needy team. And, James, you and I were talking about this on Friday. It's pretty easy to project the Titans' passing offense out and to get him to a 100 targets if he is indeed going to start. And so that makes him really interesting as a late-round flyer.
Cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
we did our Prospect of Day series over the summer. I looked at Sharp. And I one of the things I said about him, that he is a very good route runner. He's not a kind of like you said, Harmon, he's not a top-end speed guy. He's very much a technician. I think it's interesting that you mentioned him alongside Sterling Shepard, because I think they have a lot of similarities in terms of what they do on the field. I worry, though, that because there isn't a legit burner, or at least somebody that we think can take the top off the defense, and maybe Rishard Matthews can become that guy, that suddenly you're going to get defenses just kind of sitting on underneath and intermediate routes, which really will limit his effectiveness. I mean, we're looking at an offense last year overall that was the 28th offense in the National Football yeah. League. And so the burden of proof is going to be on Marcus Mariota, on Mike Mularkey, on everybody down there in Tennessee to prove to us that they can be better than they were last year. And so, I mean, look, right now Sharp's coming off the board in the double-digit rounds. He's into the draft, and I don't see a problem with like throwing a dart and seeing if he can pan out for you. But, you know, I don't know that he is more than like a fifth option right now for me.
Again, I don't see how he doesn't walk into at least 100 targets, which means his floor is pretty good. What we saw in the Week 2 preseason, he looked like the real deal.
Yeah.
His hands are...
He just looks more polished yeah. than a lot of rookies do. It
yeah.
kind of reminds me of like when Stephon Diggs kind of broke out in the middle of last year after he took a little while to get acclimated. He does a lot of the little things right now. And I think the biggest thing for him in fantasy, like you said, is his volume. I don't
yeah.
think there's any way he's not at least the number two wideout on this offense with
Agreed.
Him and Rishard Matthews, like Marcus was saying. And while last year the Titans were the 28th ranked offense, so much has changed this year.
Yeah,
I mean, let's not forget Zach Mettenberger was making, you know, valuable starts for them last year. If Mariota stays healthy with that combo of Murray and Derrick Henry in the backfield, these two wideouts could be interesting.
You know, I'll tell you this, too.
We still have Mike Mularkey.
I noticeably left him off for a reason.
For some reason, when we start talking about Tajay Sharp, I always pictured him as this, like, 5'10", 5'11", 185 guy. He's 6'2", 200 pounds, and he ran a 4'5", 5'40". The guy can, you know, people talk about him not having top-end speed. A 4.5 5.40 at 6'2", look, that's pretty good. And again, I think his athleticism is fine. Is he one of those guys that's a special athlete? No. But I do think that with his route-running skills and that speed and that size, and obviously we saw the hands in Week 2, I'm really starting to dig Tajay Sharp, man. I think he can really make an impact in fantasy. And in PPR, I tell you right now, I would not feel uncomfortable playing him in my flex at all.
I think another big thing with a rookie like this in the preseason is building that trust with his quarterback. And if he's hauling in all these targets that come his way, Mariota is going to trust him and just load him up early in the season. And
I don't disagree.
You know, that's
highlighted
a huge thing.
Great catch today when we were in the Stronghold franchise. You showed me the one he caught up in traffic.
Yeah, in double coverage and
yeah.
got blasted and hung on to it.
That's
yeah.
the kind of thing that definitely builds up trust.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Seattle. Thomas Rawls back practicing now. He says he's going to be ready to go for Week 1. And there's no reason not to believe him. He's out there practicing. And again, he was a workhorse bell cow type dude. Last year in 2015 when Marshawn Lynch went down. But we've seen Christian Michael now make an impact as well. You know, it's interesting. Everyone says, well, what's the difference now with C. Mike? And, you know, we found out that he had a child recently, right? And so, like, him being a dad has made him more mature. He's more focused on football. And I think he sees this as his last opportunity to really make an impact in the NFL. And I'll tell you, as a relatively new dad myself, I could absolutely see that. I could absolutely see that changing a person and having them be more focused on the future and in the present and basically just maturing up. Because I tell you, you know, 5 years ago before I had a kid, I was frequenting the bars. so much anymore.
I like this. This is like the second week in a row we've had you on like
some dad analysis.
On like what's the word I'm looking for? Intangible dad analysis sort
yeah.
of stuff.
That's true.
Nice.
Very good.
Right.
One.
Yeah, and you're the only one in this podcast studio right
Who
now
has
that
experience?
Could provide that.
Yeah,
you know that we know of.
All I know is now
we know of.
With this talk of Thomas Rawls coming back, all of your Kristen Michael chickens are coming home to roost.
No.
They're all coming home to roost.
The Rawls thing doesn't go with my narrative, so I don't buy into it.
There you go.
That's a professional fantasy analysis.
Yeah. C-Mike is going to be involved whether Rawls is there or not. It's the question
Is that true, though?
Yeah, he's gonna get work.
Sadly,
Yeah, I mean, why not?
Because I think the history that we've seen with Pete Carroll and Bevel is that they've gone with one guy.
Because they had one. They had Lynch. They had that dude.
Well, hey, listen, Marshawn Lynch, yes. But even when Marshawn Lynch went down, Thomas Rawls got all the carries, man. It wasn't like they were easing Thomas Rawls in. They just said, hey, Rook.
But they didn't have anyone.
They didn't have anybody else. They had 33-year-old semi-injured Fred Jackson. And Kristen Michael still off in the wilderness somewhere trying to find himself.
And good point.
All his teammates and coaches are – there's just all these articles keep coming out about how C-Mike has changed. This article on ESPN was posted last week. Doug Baldwin said he wanted to elevate his game in terms of the passing game. He's worked really hard to get to where he's at. Earl Thomas said he's being creative setting up his runs, and it's exciting to see. His work ethic is off the charts.
There you go.
Pete Carroll said his reads, his pass protection stuff, his ball catching skills, everything is up. I think he's taking care of the football better. I think in general he's just more mindful of how to play the position. All aspects of his game have improved.
All right, so here's the thing. C-Mike is no better than a late-round dart throw.
Yes?
Okay, so.
Agree.
I want to say dart throw, but because he went in, round 10 of our recent mock? And that kind of area where he's either a high-level backup or somebody you think could push for usable weeks on his own, even in some sort of committee, I think that's more where
I think in more regular person leagues, I'd be surprised if he's drafted. I think he'll go, somewhere in that 12 to 15 round range, if he goes at all. But what does this mean for Thomas Rawls? Because, yes, let's say Thomas Rawls projected to start week one.
Yeah.
He was as high as the second round. I cannot see him being drafted there now.
No, but he's falling as far as the fifth round, and I think a mock week
good price?
Today, yeah, that's a good price for Rawls, for sure.
Yeah.
Fifth round, sixth round.
You don't seem too high on that, Harmon.
I mean, I love that. Like, I actually legitimately think that Seattle could have the best offense in the NFL this year with the guys that they have.
Watch out.
At the pass catching core, the quarterback that they have.
Yeah.
These two running backs, if they're going to play this way, that's great. If they get anything from our boy CJ Procise at this point, I think that's kind of gravy.
Yeah.
But it just could make for a really confusing week-to-week split. Because you're right that Seattle has tended to ride one player at the running back position, but that could easily be like, all right, Rawls, this is your week. Michael, this is your week.
Hmm.
And I think that I do want a running back that's attached to that kind of explosive offense, but I don't know. It makes me feel weird investing in it. And I don't really have a good reason for it, but it makes me feel weird investing in Rawls. I just get kind of a bad feeling, and that's
a
pretty crappy analysis that I just gave you.
I feel similarly, and I think part of that reasoning, too, is that this might be one of those situations where the cat's out of the bag now. Rawls has missed so much time,
right,
and C-Mike has looked so good and built up all this steam that they really can't just put him back in. Because you know what happens in Seattle if Rawls is a little slow out of the gate because of his ankle or has a game that struggles, then it's like, then the 12s are pounding on the walls of the stadium like, where's C-Mike?
Right, but I mean, this I think that part speaks to the way Pete Carroll runs a football team and that it is built on competition.
Absolutely.
I know that you guys get sick of us USC honks around here always talking about
do.
Stuff.
Yep.
But the fact
sure
of the matter
do.
Is, I mean, our senior producer for NFL Fantasy Live, Dylan Milner, started pulling out all these names of mediocre USC running backs who got chances because of competition. C.J. Gable, Emmanuel Moody. I mean, like, you know, guy, Mark Tyler. You know what I mean? These guys.
People I've legitimately.
Right, but that's the point. Because, like, in practice over the week, they would have a good week. They would get a start, and they would get carries. And so that's going to translate to Seattle. So maybe if Rawls comes back and he's not good for a week, then we see C-Mike. And then if Rawls gets better again, then he gets to be the guy in there. I'm trying to tell you, this is not going to be good for us.
No, it's not good. That's my point. That's why it makes me weird about Rawls. Like, It's none of it is good for us.
I feel like the random street preacher on the corner warning you about the end is coming.
What, you're going to be the crazy sign guy?
It's just everyone. When Lynch retired, everyone thought they were getting a feature back in Rawls, and things have changed over the offseason, and now we have a committee.
Yeah, it's not like we're that excited about the committee. We're just trying to figure it out, Marcus.
We're just happy for Kristen Michael.
Yeah.
Can't we just be happy?
Did you have a mediocre weekend, Marcus?
Let's go to Jacksonville. The backfield is starting to basically pan out the way a lot of fantasy enthusiasts thought it would pan out. In terms of Chris Ivor being the between the tackles guy, TJ Yeldon basically being their, you know, change of pace, third down, pass catching back. And I think you'll see a lot more of Yeldon between the 20s. And then, you know, of course, once they get into that red zone, I think you're going to see a lot more of Chris Ivory. And that's basically what we've kind of seen through two preseason games here with Jacksonville. What do we make of that news, if anything at all?
I mean, TJ Yeldon's great if you like running backs who just fall down.
Oh,
dang.
Boo.
Marcus doesn't like TJ Yeldon.
I mean, he's
I'm not a big
Marcus
fan.
Like, hates TJ
Yeldon, he is – I mean, I don't think he's that far from his ceiling. I mean, I think what we saw last year is about what you can expect from Yeldon, and now that Chris Ivory's there, I guess that takes away from that even more.
What did Yeldon have last year? Two touchdowns?
I mean,
he might have had four, and I think he had like 1,000 total yards.
Right. I mean, he just – I don't know if it's a balance thing or what, but just watching his game tape,
he's stiff.
It was appalling to me the number of times he fell over with little to no contact.
Well, he's an upright runner. And I think we kind of knew that coming out of college.
Yeah.
But you know, again, he's pretty good out of the backfield, catching the ball. He'll have a role. I don't know. It's a backfield nobody's too terribly excited about. I don't know if anybody's investing, you know, anything other than a double-digit pick
but
on either Chris Ivory or TJ Yeldon.
It was three total touchdowns for Yeldon.
But that's the thing. They're both those guys are going pretty high.
Are they?
Chris Ivory on Fantasy Football Calculator is a sixth-round pick.
Horrible price.
It's like a non-starter price for
right.
me. No. I don't want to touch either of these guys regardless, but the sixth round is egregious for
that's
Ivory.
Horrendous.
That's too high.
I think Yeldon is buying time once again, is an eighth-round pick.
Horrendous.
I don't want to touch either of them, but of the two, I'd rather take Yeldon because if Chris Ivory gets hurt, which he's known to do, then he steps into a role where he assumes, much like, you know, a Charles Sims or
sure.
Bilal Powell, you know, same way, like he's going to already have the passing down work pretty much wrapped up if Ivory goes down.
I can't believe those prices.
That goes both ways, though.
But right. I don't know that Ivory could just step into the role as a pass catcher.
He had 30 catches last year. Yeldon had 36.
Which is a pretty big career outlier. And then he got usurped by Bilal Powell at the end of the year as the pass
catcher.
Because he was all
injured.
Banged up.
Yeah.
He's definitely not the most durable guy. I think sixth round is too early. Earlier in the summer, Ivory was going in like the ninth round.
I think that makes more sense.
I was calling him – I wrote a must-own running backs piece a month or two ago. And
uh-huh.
At that price, he's a must-own in the ninth round.
Ninth round, I like it.
Right. But now he's creeping up, and I don't know.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
The thing is, he's overrated at the thing he's supposed to be good at. Like, he's supposed to be their red zone, you know, goal line back.
Not that great.
Of running backs that had carries inside the five – Chris Ivory led the NFL with 17, and he only scored 5 touchdowns. D'Angelo Williams comparison, 16 for 10 touchdowns. Adrian Peterson, 14 for 4. Jeremy Hill, 13 for 8. You know, a lot of these guys are just more efficient on the goal line. Chris Ivory's just kind of an overrated red zone back.
I think I don't know that all of those carries end up the same. We'd have to go back and watch them closely. But I will say, and this is a tease to a piece, that Lance Zierlein is actually writing for NFL Fantasy this week, looking at offensive line production and the yards that running backs are able to create for themselves.
Sick.
Let's go, Lance.
He had just sent me the numbers earlier. Nobody had a greater like individual performance index, I think is what it's called, than Chris Ivory last year of the top backs. He was one of the best at creating for himself.
All right, let's talk about the NFC.
I guess I'll just shut up.
I was just throwing that out there as well.
He is – Ivory, this stat always jumped out at me since I saw it. He's one of only 3 running backs to average 4 yards per carry in every season since 2010.
That's interesting.
So
it's not bad.
All right, NFC East now. Let's talk about the Cowboys. Ezekiel Elliott is creeping into that first round. We're seeing him go near the end of the first round. How high would you take Ezekiel Elliott? Is that a good price? 8, 9, 10, something like that?
Yes.
I'd do that. Sure.
Yep.
In fact, I think we're doing our mock drafts on Periscope. We're doing 3 rounds at a time. And I took Ezekiel Elliott, I believe, in the 8th spot. With the we're doing 5 guys with 2 teams apiece. So my second team, which is in the 8th slot,
yeah,
took Ezekiel Elliott in the first round.
Atta baby.
Yeah, I hate having picks in the 6, 7, 8 range. Talking is hard. And even the 9th pick, but that's like where I'm kind of like, hey, if I'm there, if there's no wide receiver that I like, I'll take Ezekiel Elliott.
All right, there you go. How about Dez Bryant?
First rounder?
Yeah.
Is he?
End of the first round for me.
Depending
where, you know, who's off the board at that point, I would take him 9th or 10th.
Before Gronk?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would definitely.
Yes.
I think Gronk is a trap as a first round pick.
Absolutely.
I'm not falling for that this year.
All right, there you go.
Dez Bryant is just kind of like, how is the mood striking me when I'm drafting? Like, do I think he's going to immediately jump back to the 1,300 yards, like 12 touchdown range, or do I have concerns with Tony Romo's recent injuries that Dez Bryant is going to suffer? Well, I mean, Dak Prescott's been looking great, but
That's the thing, though, Wiz, right, is the fact that Dak Prescott has looked so good.
Yeah, but Dak Prescott's not starting.
Yeah, it's still
– No, it's not so much that. But, I mean, we already know about the chemistry between Tony Romo and Dez Bryant. And the fear, right, is that not just Dez Bryant because he's coming off of his own foot injury.
Yeah.
The fear is not just Dez's own injury concerns, but then also his production being tied to Tony Romo. Well, listen, if Tony Romo gets hurt – I feel super confident about Dak Prescott coming in and then funneling more targets to Dez Bryant.
I don't yet because it is still preseason, and preseason quarterback play is completely different than the animal that a rookie would face
True.
In the regular season.
Matt McGloin's a preseason hero.
Sam Bradford looked like a god last year. Let's never forget that pushed his ADP up to near like 10 or round 10 or 11 last year.
Yeah,
and I was one of the idiots that bought into it. So that's it's a little recency bias, and I still feel the burn of that one.
I don't know if this happened in the most recent Cowboys preseason game, but in their first one when Prescott hit Dez for the touchdown, I think the case there was the Cowboys left their good wide receivers in while the opposing team had like their second or third string defense in just to help Dak Prescott build his confidence so that they had easier matchups for him to throw those balls for Dez to go get.
All right, there
Even
you go.
Just the offense being functional with a good backup quarterback in there is important because Dez has just never been the guy that gets the type of volume for whatever reason that the other wide receiver ones do. I mean, he had 138 targets in 2012, 159, then 136. He's never cracked 160. He's made his living in fantasy off being an elite red zone threat, and that's why his production craters without Romo because they just don't reach the end zone.
Yeah. All right, Matt Harmon, talk to me about Terrence Williams.
So Gellhar and I have been in this like weird – debate about Terrence Williams.
It's the stupidest thing to
debate.
It's
stupid because you're wrong, but and like I don't
wrong.
I don't even think Terrence Williams is good. Like I don't know how I got to a point where I'm advocating for Terrence Williams, but he's like consistently a top 45 wide receiver in fantasy, and Gellhar wants to crater him down to like the wide receiver 60 range or whatever, but there's just no logical reason to put him that low if he's consistently been a wide receiver 40. Like, what's changed? They haven't gotten any other options there to throw to. I think it's a lock for him to get 800 yards and 6 touchdowns.
Have fun picking the Terrence Williams game.
I don't want to draft Terrence Williams in fantasy outside of best ball leagues, but I'm telling you, he's getting 800 yards and 6
and,
TDs.
And here's my answer to that.
Matt Harmon, who's an idiot.
Okay.
So Harmon and I are going to put a beer bet on this, and at the end of the year it's 806 if Tony Romo plays 14 games, correct?
14 games, yeah. I settled for 14 because he's not going to play 16.
I say he will not just because I think other players not named Terrence Williams, I don't even know who they are.
Who?
How about
Beasley? Mike Wallace.
Mike Wallace.
What do you mean?
Is he there?
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm confused.
Oh, sorry. I'm riffing. Leave me alone.
Who has a better season,
Terrence Williams or Mike?
Oh, Mike Wallace. I'm talking about in Dallas. Like, who is going to catch passes other than Terrence Williams?
This is just us being selfish, and we've had this discussion at the apartment and at the bar a few times. And we're like, we'll just do an official wager on the podcast.
All right,
do it. But anyways, Cole Beasley, Lucky Whitehead. Do they still have Devin Street? How about some scrub off the waiver wire? Gavin Escobar, Jason Witten,
right now,
Bryce Butler.
Zeke.
I feel like Cole Beasley is the only other receiver in that conversation.
Bro.
Potentially.
Yeah, exactly. Like none of those guys are relevant.
Potentially, yeah.
I don't care. Let's book it. All right, let's move on.
800 yards, 6 touchdowns.
All right, there you go.
Take it to the bank.
Helping no one. Helping.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you draft, like, if you're still drafting MFL 10s, you can take him as like a 16th round pick.
Sure.
He's
right.
Have
18th,
20th.
You go to Philadelphia. The backfield is interesting.
The backfield is deep sigh from franchise.
No.
I have reached the point.
Ryan Matthews and Darren Sproles.
I have reached a point where I might just be off everybody in this offense.
Yeah.
No Ryan Matthews?
Kind of with you there.
I just might be. I mean, he's the only one that I would give even a cursory look at.
I think he's interesting given his price tag. He's going, just, what, somewhere in the
round
6, 7?
Round 6 about right now.
Yeah, I mean, I just at this point, I think I would rather just stay away. And I was looking today, sneak peek, this is going to be something that's going to be on Tuesday's NFL Fantasy Live, is offenses that you would avoid completely. And I went through all the 32 teams, and on 31 of them, there was at least one guy that I was like, yeah, I really would take a shot at this guy. And then I got to the Eagles, and it was kind of like the best I could come up with was a, yes. And so, like, at that point, I think that proved to me that I just don't want to fool with this group at all.
Well, that, as far as the backfield goes, I'm with you, James. I kind of like Ryan Matthews at that round six-ish price.
100%.
Because, like, if he does stay healthy, which I know is an if, he's got a history of it. He already has an ankle injury. He returned to practice, though. Like, Doug Peterson and his offense in Kansas City loved funneling the ball primarily through one back. I mean, granted, that back was Jamal Charles, not Ryan Matthews. Still, if he gives that kind of treatment to Ryan Matthews, he can catch passes. He's not an elite pass catcher by any stretch. I could see him putting up solid RB2 numbers while he's on the field in that offense. I'm also starting to like Darren Sproles.
I was going
to
bring him up.
He's not being drafted right now. And he's a guy who had over 130 touches last year when DeMarco Murray was in this offense and had 230-plus touches. So with him out, if they just pull Matthews out in passing situations or when they're running the hurry up or down by a lot, which could happen a bunch if their offense struggles to put up points early, Sproles could be a huge, like, Danny Woodhead-type flex player even in standard leagues just because of that weekly yardage floor he'll get. Because I think they'll give him the ball between the tackles, too. They just locked him up to another extension. That's, you don't do that to somebody that you're not going to give the ball to or just, you know, cast off to the wilderness.
Yeah, I mean, he's 33 years old, so, I mean, obviously he's a little longer in the tooth. But that being said, it's not like his game is something where, you know, he's going to pound the rock in between the tackles.
No.
He had 700 yards last year. 700 scrimmage yards and 4 touchdowns.
But there were so many. Well, first of all, DeMarco Murray was there. Chip Kelly did not favor using Darren Sproles very much at all.
Right. I mean, but the last two seasons, his 2 seasons in Philadelphia, I mean,
yeah,
he has averaged just over 700 yards and just a handful of touchdowns. I think he's got 10 touchdowns in the last 2 seasons. So there's a little bit of upside there. I just feel like Darren Sproles is not a guy you're holding a roster spot for.
He's free, though. He's coming at the area where people are taking shots on the likes
right,
of DeAndre Washington or Spencer Ware. And Sproles, I think, is going to have a much bigger workload.
Right, except I think, and we've talked about this a lot, guys who are essentially, you know, quote-unquote free at the end of your draft.
Yeah.
I'm starting to wonder whether or not you even spend a draft pick on those guys. You pick those guys up off the waiver wire because, again, I don't know that the production for Darren Sproles warrants me holding a roster spot for him for more than a couple of weeks.
I
pick him up when somebody's hurt or if I got a bye week or something like that.
I think what you're really pointing at, though, is more of like you don't believe in the upside. I think
not
that's
enough.
Because
not enough.
You'll take a flyer on a guy who is in the 13th, 14th round if you think his upside is tremendous.
Right.
Like, if you love Kenneth Dixon, right? Like, if you think Kenneth Dixon is the guy in this backfield, maybe it takes him 5-6 weeks to develop, you hold on to him.
I also think the corollary to that, though, is that when we talk about upside, it's guys that we don't 100% know what they offer.
Right.
And we're optimistic about what it could be.
That's true.
And for as much as I like Darren Sproles as a player, dude's fun to watch. If I was in a point per steps taken league, he'd be my number one pick. That dude's got the shortest, choppiest steps of anybody I've ever seen.
That's great.
But we also at this point know who Darren Sproles is. And so the upside isn't quite there because we've, I think, at this point seen the best of Darren Sproles.
By the way, you know, we've talked about Wendell Smallwood in that backfield too. Again, just having seen enough tape on that guy, I just don't get it. I don't understand the love affair. I think he's a totally capable, you know, running back, and that's fine. I just think he's fine. I just don't see a lot of upside with Wendell Smallwood. But, you know, going back to Doug Peterson, yeah, he was in Kansas City, but he's been with Andy Reid, and Andy Reid has obviously developed a lot of talent at the running back position. Man, I tell you, I'm kind of excited about what Ryan Matthews might do in this offense. And again, you talk about that, you know, round six price. I think we've already kind of priced in the fact that he's probably going to miss some games, no? Because, I mean, he is a featured guy in this Eagles offense. There's not that many featured backs in this league, and we're taking him in round six. It's because we're already anticipating him missing, you know, 2 or 3 games, I think. All right, let's go to New York.
Wait, we got to talk about this passing game.
Oh, sorry, Jordan Matthews. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we should mention it. If you look at the rundown, peel back the curtain here, open the kimono, peek around the corner. I said, is this the most untouchable passing game in fantasy?
I don't know. I mean, there's really
Baltimore's still hanging around there.
Baltimore. Oh, there's so many guys.
I would target so many people in there. Kamar Aiken, Mike Wallace.
Even Joe Flacco. Is a screamer because they're going to throw.
Bigger league, I'd take a shot at Ben Watson.
You're not taking a quarterback off the Eagles, that's
no.
for sure.
No.
But, yeah, I mean, Jordan Matthews is certainly going to be the first name off the board in terms of the passing game.
Yeah.
DGB is there. Again, I know a lot of folks are getting excited about DGB there because he fits a role. But, I mean, come on. We're a month out from the season, and he's learning a brand-new playbook.
I
don't know. I'm off of DGB this year. I don't see him making an impact.
I still kind of like Nelson Agholor as a player, but not enough in this offense to spend a draft pick on him when they clearly don't believe in him. I mean, if they believed in him, they wouldn't trade for Dorial Green.
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of great press about him recently, too, because they were saying he's going to – I think it was one of the beat reporters, like, he's going to start just by default.
Yeah.
He has not wowed in camp or anything.
He's not done a lot to open eyes.
So that's disappointing. But that's what I mean, like, are you going to take a shot at Zach Ertz? Like, even Zach Ertz scares me because Brent Celek is still there.
Yeah. And Zach Ertz has never in his career ever been a prolific touchdown scorer, and he's not a guy that consistently catches a lot of passes either.
So I ask,
what are you paying for?
I ask again, is this the most untouchable passing game in fantasy?
It might be if the team's wide receiver one is going in like the eighth round, then yeah, probably.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, their pass catchers not too great, and then Jordan Matthews is just a big slot guy.
Well, and he's coming back from a bone bruise in his knee right now, and the slot guy had never been a big part of the Doug Peterson, Andy Reid offenses before, so it's even a wonder if he's going to have the same kind of volume he had in the past years where they focused on him. Like, will the offense shift and focus on him, or will it go with Doug Peterson's philosophy? I don't know. That's why I'm scared.
All right, let's go to New York. Rashad Jennings is supposedly – I mean, you listen to the running back coaches. You listen to the head coaches there. You start reading the press clippings. Rashad Jennings is supposed to be the guy there for New York at least early on. And then, you know, they're going to try to work in guys like Shane Vereen. The running back coach made it very clear that the three-headed attack that they had last year
– Four.
Four-headed attack they had last year was not effective.
Duh.
Yeah. Thanks for that now. Yeah, Ralph Bacciano from the New York Daily News at the time reported it's clear from talking to the running back coach. Literally, it's clear that they're going to scrap that four-way committee and that Rashad Jennings is the number one back.
Is he going to be the goal line back, though? Because now there's talk of
Andre Williams.
Like, being the clear number two, which is just outrageous.
He did get – I mean, Jennings punched in a carry at the goal line in the first preseason game. I have a hard time imagining that they're really going to take – Jennings off the field for Williams, especially because it was so effective when they didn't do that last year.
Right.
When they finally ditched that committee.
Yeah.
The last four weeks.
They gave Jennings 21.5 touches per game, and he was the running back three overall in fantasy during that stretch. I mean, the running back three, and that just, again, like Jennings is a solid player, but attached to such a prolific passing offense, you can't pass up a running back like that.
It's so funny right now, too, because the perception of Jennings is awful. Like, I tweeted like a month ago.
Yeah.
I was like, this guy's a great pick in round 10 or whatever. And my mentions were like, oh, gross, like committee, he's trash or whatever. So in casual leagues, you can even wait probably a little longer on Jennings and scoop up a huge 100%. Value.
Right.
He's the RB35 right now.
I remember jumping on late in the year when the Giants finally came to their senses and decided to go with him as their primary back, and I think that continues this year. The concerns for Jennings are that he's a guy who has had some injury issues.
Yep. He's going to get hurt. Yeah. He's not playing 16.
And he is running behind a line that's not a great run-blocking unit. So that's something to be worried about. But if you're talking about Jennings as your third or fourth running back, then where he's coming off the board, you're going to get good value.
Yeah. I think you're going to get production early part of the season. Again, it's almost impossible to assume that he's going to play a full 16 because I don't know if he's ever done it. Has he ever done it?
I think last year might have been the first time he did it.
No. He missed games last year.
And
did he?
I mean, he also spent a large part of his career as a backup, which is a part of it. I would say,
when he's played and gotten the rock, he's been good.
You talk about him.
Actually, he did play 16 last year.
Yeah, he played 16 last year.
Yeah, and that's because he saw such little workload.
Right.
You talk about production early in the season. I think you also get good production from him late in the year because playing there at the Meadowlands, it's notorious in November, December for these swirling winds and being super cold and making it a little more difficult to throw the football. Not that they won't, obviously, with Eli and Odell Beckham.
Right.
But there may be an opportunity for them to try and control games on the ground, which could bode well for Jennings.
Like, if you draft a zero RB team, I think Jennings is a must-get for the reasons that Marcus just outlined and James outlined, because of the touches that you're going to get at the beginning of the season. Like, if you after the seventh round, and he's currently a seventh-round pick on Fantasy Football Calculator, but I took him in the eighth round of our mock draft today. As Gelhar said, in casual leagues, he's got all the black marks against him.
Yeah.
You know, if you can lock in 15-plus touches per game, which seems like a pretty good bet for Jennings at the early part of the season for a zero-RB team, that's a huge win.
That's not bad. Sterling Shepard. We've heard so many good stories about Sterling Shepard in training camp.
I dig it.
We've seen him, you know, preseason games and all that. And then, of course, Victor Cruz still struggling to get back onto the practice field and play some football. So what do we project for a guy like Sterling Shepard?
Harmon, this is your boy.
Yeah, I've been on Sterling Shepard pretty much since, like, November. Before the college football season ended, I started charting.
I think you came to me with a smirk when you came home from work on a Saturday. You're like, I think I found my guy this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Sterling Shepard from Oklahoma.
Unfortunately, he became like everybody's guy, which is just a good sign because he's that good. Shepard was one of the stars of reception perception amongst the charted rookies. He had an 82.8% success rate versus man coverage, best in the class, 91.1% success rate versus press coverage, best in the class. I mean, he's a guy that gets open consistently on short to intermediate timing-based routes, which is what Ben McAdoo and that West Coast offense really wants to run. So, I mean, it really was one of those picks that you're like, yeah, that makes a ton of sense when it happened in
slam dunk.
Yeah, and there's, as you were saying, Victor Cruz, it's to quote a James Coe article, he hasn't played since Nevuary.
That was a good line.
Yeah, it was one of the best. And, I mean, you know, I feel bad for Victor Cruz, but at this point I think we need to believe or need to see it before we believe it.
Right.
He's ever going to get back on the field in any sort of capacity that he used to be. And Shepard's going to step into that number two role. I mean, that has been the consistent drumbeat throughout the entire offseason. So, you know, if you can lock in 100 targets, which I think is a given pretty much with the way things are right now, even if the guy's a rookie, that's a great value in the eighth.
They don't throw the tight end.
No. And we have Will Tye, who is an intriguing sleeper for what he did as an undrafted free agent last year, an athletic guy out of Stony Brook. But other than that, they don't have any really intriguing names at the number three receiver position, unless you count Victor Cruz. The tight ends are a question mark. Shane Vereen's going to command a small amount of the passing targets, but I mean, Shepard is the guy there. He's the number two, and this is an offense that is going to be a top 10 passing attempts team.
And then you look at the division as well.
Again,
pretty soft schedule, I would imagine,
for all those guys.
Absolutely.
Wide receivers, running backs, everything.
Which is partly why, James, you think I think this was your hot take for the week, but Eli Manning, top five QB, huh?
Yeah.
Ooh, hot.
Because here's the thing. He was a top 10 quarterback last year, right? He had 4,400 yards and 35 touchdowns. He had the best quarterback rating of his career last year, year number two under Ben McAdoo. What does it mean, year number three under Ben McAdoo? If he can get to 4,500 yards, and let's say he pushes 40 touchdowns, let's say he gets a 38-39, that's not a stretch at all. That's not a stretch at all. Ben McAdoo is going to play much faster than what we saw under Tom Coughlin. And we talk about it all the time with Chip Kelly that, hey, he runs a lot of plays. I wouldn't be surprised in this McAdoo offense if they run a lot more plays than what we saw last year. I don't think 4,500 yards and 40 touchdowns is out of the question at all. If he gets there, 4,500 and 40 last year would have pushed him close to QB number three.
Right. What's funny about, and when you get to this area, like obviously at the top, it's always a little tilted for the quarterbacks, whoever finishes number one. But in that, the rest of that top 10 range, 20 points separated Eli Manning from being a top five quarterback last year.
That's
so
right.
You take out a couple interceptions, throw him a few more touchdowns, boom, it could happen.
And obviously the problem with Eli is that, you know, sometimes he'll give you one of those six touchdown, seven touchdown games versus the Saints. But then he'll give you, you know, a one or no touchdown, three interception type game that absolutely kills your week. But I think we're going to see a lot less of those in 2016. I think you're going to see a lot more consistent production with some pretty good upside as well. I'm really digging Eli Manning, especially given his price tag, which is, you know, in a lot of leagues approaching double digits. So, I'll buy all day on Eli Manning.
All right, move to Washington.
Yep, let's talk about Matt Jones. He's going to be missing the rest of the preseason with an AC joint injury. That's your shoulder, for those folks who are not... Yeah, you know, Matt Jones. A lot of folks saw some burst in athleticism from Matt Jones last year. They got rid of Alfred Morris, did Washington, so a lot of folks thought, well, hey, he's just walking in to an every down role, but
I mean, you know,
so much,
what would have been great is if Washington maybe had drafted a couple years ago kind of an unsung running back who challenged for Rookie of the Year honors, was really a quality running back and an upstanding guy, a guy that you could get the ball to all the time. I mean, they really could have used one
they
of those, and it's too bad that they just never had that on their roster.
You know, when I tweeted out this weekend when Alfred Morris was looking so good on the Cowboys, you know, I was like, man, if any team in the NFL needs a starting running back, how is your first call not to Dallas to get Alfred Morris? And by far the most suggested team's like, oh, Washington could use a guy like that.
I know Greg, I think it was Greg in there around the NFL write-up made that joke too. Like, I wonder if Washington took notice.
Jeez.
But the trouble with Matt Jones is, like you said, James, the AC joint is a shoulder injury.
Yeah.
And that scares the heck out of me for a running back.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because, like, this can be – I mean, it's an important part of running backs for absorbing contact, obviously. And this is an injury that Randall Cobb had the same one last year, re-aggravated it when he got taken to the ground in week 3, and was just kind of never the same guy afterwards because it's such an important part for a football player to have that healthy shoulder. And Matt Jones being a bigger guy that's, like, running between the tackles, taking a lot of contact – that scares the heck out of me. So, I mean, Matt Jones fell to, what, the 11th round in our mock draft today? That might have been a bit of an overreaction, but we don't know for sure that he's going to play in week 1 now. So it makes Chris Thompson and Keith Marshall a heck of a lot more interesting if you're drafting in the first couple weeks, in the next couple weeks.
We know Chris Thompson is going to be great as a pass-catching back. He actually made a big-time impact last year, even in PPR formats, in the limited time that in the limited snaps that he was given. I think he'll still see that kind of workload and that kind of production. We don't know who the backup is, though. Keith Marshall was supposed to be that guy. Then he got relegated to third string. Some dude named, I think Adam Rank made the joke.
Rob Kelly.
R. Kelly's in there. I believe I can fly. I don't know. Is he trapped in a closet? Maybe. I don't know what's going on here.
I've never heard of any of these guys.
He's out of Tulane, the Rob Kelly character. But there's not really a great running back situation there in Washington either. So I don't know. I feel like
sad
every single time.
Sad indeed.
Every time I look at Matt Jones's name on my mock drafts, man, I pass every single time.
I can't get into it.
I'm on Chris Thompson, though, as a late-round pick in PPR leagues.
100%.
Another guy that's essentially free. Warren Sharp from Sharp Football Analysis
noted
that the team called a passing play on 72% of their snaps when behind in the second half last year.
Good Lord.
And, I mean, that is going to pretty much be all Thompson's work. You know, it's not crazy to think that he could post RB2 value in PPR leagues. I mean, look at what Theo Riddick did last year in a very similar situation.
Sure. Yeah.
All right, what about the wide receivers? DeSean Jackson there, Pierre Garçon. Josh Doctson recovering from his injury.
I think Pierre Garçon's a little underrated right now in this offense.
You think so?
Especially with the news I saw this morning that Josh Doctson might start the season on the PUP on the IR to return list.
I'm off Josh Doctson right now.
Well, and you
completely off Josh Doctson.
Pierre Garçon in our mock draft earlier today. But he very quietly had a decent season in a passing attack that was kind of putting itself together. He had 111 targets still last year. 72 catches. Granted, it only turned into 777 yards, but if Kirk Cousins is there and they have that explosive element in DeSean Jackson, which was missing for so long from this passing offense, I think Pierre Garçon's a fine late-round guy to target to round out a wide receiving core.
I mean, but I think what you're talking about with Pierre Garçon is, at least when you look at the overall numbers, is going to be similar to what Harmon was talking about with Terrence Williams, where you're looking at a guy who's around 800 and maybe 6 touchdowns. I mean, we all look at that season he had in 2013 – he had 1,300 yards, had 113 catches, was just a monster. That's the outlier. That is the outlier. And I think he's more of a guy who's about 800 yards and 5, 6, maybe 7 touchdowns at the most, which is fine for a late round guy, but I think I don't know that you can expect much more than that.
Where is DeSean Jackson going in mock drafts right now? Because I tell you what, he's basically in a contract year situation.
They both are.
And tell me DeSean Jackson is not going to be motivated. And a motivated DeSean, sign me up.
Wide receiver 39, 8.07 and 12.
I just want to read the DeSean Jackson quotes because I'm just sure they're going to be fantastic.
I'll take that all day.
DeJax is the guy I'd rather own out of those
100%.
Two. DeJax or Jordan Reed. But I'm just saying, like, let's not bury poor Pierre Garçon, because if this passing offense with Kirk Cousins there and all his weapons, and especially if there's no running game with Matt Jones or whomever else behind, you know, behind him, they could throw it a lot, and that would lift all the boats in the passing offense.
All right, there you go. Jordan Reed is going super high. I think at last check, he's the second tight end off the board right now after Gronk. And I just, to me, man, I don't know, man. It just seems crazy.
I see. I'm on Jordan Reed now. Like, officially, I think he's going to become a pretty central part of my draft plans at 4.04 in 12-team leagues.
I thought you were just telling me you hate taking tight end.
I normally do. I hate taking tight ends like Greg Olsen. You know what I'm saying? Like, in the fifth round, like, yeah. I could see Greg Olsen stand to lose a pretty good amount of targets this year, just because the Carolina offense is not a pass set. But that's a separate discussion. I'm not going to go down that road. So Jordan Reed.
Yes.
Focus. So Jordan Reed, I took him in the fifth round of our mock draft today.
That's surprising.
And I think it's because, for one, when you get into that fifth round range or even in the mid fourth, I don't find like a lot of really appealing options, especially like I want to get Dante Moncrief in one of those two rounds. But other than that, there isn't like a many guys that I'm really excited about other than, you know, like the Moncriefs and the John Browns. But Jordan Reed, I think, really helps you build. Like, the key thing about building a zero running back team is not just, or even just a wide receiver heavy team, is not just that you're hammering wide receivers. You also have to get, like, that unfair advantage at tight end, too.
Yeah.
And Jordan Reed was that last year. He was only 1 point off per game scoring from Gronk. So, I mean, if you're getting Gronk in the fourth round, instead of having to pay that first round price, like, sign me up for that all day.
I agree with you 100% too. Sorry to jump your franchise, but I was looking at Reed in that round too in our mock, and you took him because with so many people leaning a little wide receiver earlier, like, once you get to the fifth round, the options are uninspiring. The fourth, fifth round, and especially if guys like Moncrief and the Cardinals wide receivers and, you know, Randall Cobb and stuff are gone. If Jordan Reed's sitting there, that's a really enticing option there. I'd be scared to draft him any higher than that, but as soon as I enter round four, Jordan Reed is on speed dial if my roster is looking the right way.
It's the injury history that concerns me.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you take Jordan Reed there, you got to back him up later with someone else.
Just get Jared Cook like I did.
Yeah, there's
top 10 tight ends.
There's so many other tight ends you can grab later. They won't return the kind of production that Reed will give you, but someone you can plug in if he misses a few games or whatever it is.
I'm actually surprised to hear that again from Harmon. You saying that you took another tight end. That's another thing that you've always been hammering folks on. Don't take that second tight end.
I know. I'm an idiot, and I'm really buying into the Jared Cook thing this year.
I'm starting to buy in on that.
Hey,
too.
By the way, who do you live with?
Well, I mean, Homer Boy.
Noted Packer honk, Alex Gelhar.
But it's not even like
out of baby.
But it's not even just him. Like, I was listening to the Living the Stream podcast again with Danny Carter, who's like the number one Jared Cook truther. And he's able to paint a pretty reliable scenario that you can actually see happening where Jared Cook is a top 10 tight end. Because, you know, we keep talking about who's going to be the Green Bay number three wide receiver, who's going to be the Green Bay number three wide receiver.
Spoiler alert, it's Jared Cook.
It might be just Jared Cook, yeah.
By the way, you can't be a good truther without being able to paint a solid picture of your guy.
Hey, that's what it's all about, man.
Stealing my Jared Cook.
Kirk Cousins going in those double-digit rounds. I love the way his schedule plays out, at least in the first 6 weeks of the season. They have a very soft schedule, do the Washington Redskins. If you're taking Kirk Cousins in round 12, 13, all day long.
You like that?
All day long. All day long. Let's do the Fan League update, shall we?
Let's do it. It's just down to you and the Danger Zone
League. Yeah, so it's the Danger Zone League. I'm going to add three guys here. First person is Dominic Smith at DSmith Future. And the reason is very simple.
Wait, we're getting Future in the league?
Oh, wow.
We got Sierra coming in next. No. 2 Chainz is on deck. No. Dominic Smith, it's very, very simple. He says he's got a kid on the way, I think, on Friday or next Friday. He said he's going to name his kid, get this, Caden Fantasy Live Smith.
What?
I love it.
Come on.
That's a little...
I feel like this was...
Come on.
Wasn't crazy.
Wasn't this a subplot on The League one season?
Yeah. Batman Chalupa?
Chalupa Batman.
Come on. This guy's got to get in the league.
Got to.
All he's right.
Gonna, hey, I guess
he's
in.
It's a dangerous name. Put him in the danger zone.
He also left a review. You could do that as well.
I'm wondering, did he consult with his wife on...
I don't know. He said he's gonna send me a pic of his kid's birth certificate.
Dude.
And it's supposedly gonna say Caden Fantasy Live Smith.
Because I feel like this is one that would seem to be hard to get past this.
I mean, it could just be a case where, like, honey, I got the birth certificate. Like, yeah, okay, we'll put that in there. And then just, it's just done.
What happened here? All right, how about
clerical error. Whoops.
Yep, exactly. How about Shannon Smith at That's My Pencil? Shannon Smith, don't know if it's a guy or a girl, but Shannon Smith pencil sketched an awesome picture of the Fantasy Live podcast. Mm-hmm. It is my profile background page. Marcus Grant,
it's your
Twitter avatar. It was tremendous.
It was incredible. I woke up this morning to see that on Twitter and retweeted it immediately.
So great.
It was really good.
I was like, what?
Yep, she very accurately made my head look as big as it is in real life. So that
it was pretty
accurate.
Scary how accurate they were. She correctly gave me no mustache hair. To
nice.
Or he or she. He or she. Sorry, Shane.
He or she gave me no mustache hair to be seen by the naked eye.
I've also noted that me and Matt Harmon are the only ones not wearing suits.
Right. Because we're plebes.
By the way, fellas, there is a Twitter avatar picture, and I believe Shannon is a guy.
Oh, sorry, Shannon.
Okay. No.
I mean,
Shannon's shark.
That's not the avatar that was there this morning.
Well, that's the avatar that's there now.
All right.
Well, we didn't know.
Shannon, I feel your pain with the androgynous name.
Hey.
Lots of times Alex can get spun the other way.
Welcome to the danger zone, pal. All right, and the last one is Brian Gorlick, at Gorlick. This guy, the only reason he is so thirsty to be in this league.
So thirsty.
He's so thirsty.
The thirst is strong with this one.
It's ridiculous how thirsty he is to be in this league. So you know what? He had a pretty good review as well. What did it say? Great listen to, blah 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 blah. I bother them on Twitter every single day. He does.
True.
That he does. Only negative is having to lower my radio every single time James Coe laughs. Also true. Not going to lie, trying to get into their fantasy league, blah, 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 blah. You know what? It was good. It was a good review, but, man, that dude is relentless on Twitter. Mm-hmm. He's so thirsty to be in this league. It's unreal. So, you know what? You're in the league.
Welcome aboard.
You're in the league.
Nice.
I like it. Let's do daily daps and get out of
here. And wait, just a quick minor update.
Yes,
you've got
please.
Three more people to enter the
so,
league.
So, right now, there's a little bit of confusion because – Adam Rank, being the fantasy maverick that he is.
Oh, did he just go and pull people in on his own?
He may have. He's not sure.
Oh, God. Wow.
I will say this. So I added three. There's going to be at least one more spot open.
On Friday's podcast.
On Friday's podcast. So it will either be – there's either one or maybe two spots still up for grabs. And to be considered for the Danger Zone League, it's a 16-team league. All you got to do is subscribe, rate, and review the NFL Fantasy Live podcast.
And I will say, probably to help yourself out, tweet a picture to James since he's picking this final one.
Oh, it's so
and
hard.
Now be different. Don't barrage him with tweets like Gorlick did. Don't draw a picture like Shannon did. Stand out. Like, this is going to at least potentially the last entry to the Danger Zone League.
Yeah.
Stand out, folks.
The other thing I like, too, is that Matt Harmon is, like, throwing guys my way and is like, yeah, you should add this guy. You should add this
guy. Well, look, our league is full. I'm out of power, and I feel I told you last podcast, I feel terrible for all these people that do cool stuff and can't get in. I don't feel bad for the people that just review it and then, you know, just do the baseline.
Right.
I'm talking about all these overachievers.
Man, it's tough, though. It is tough.
Like, and just a thanks again to all the listeners, because like I was hoping we'd get some good responses, but the amount of responses
was deluge.
Overwhelming.
Yeah.
Like the good, the bad, they're funny. Like we read all of them, because I know I spent way too much time at work reading through these. But they were tremendous. So really, like thanks a lot everybody for listening, subscribing. You're why we do this, and hopefully next year we'll get more people into the leagues.
The last thing I want to say about the reviews is that, you know what, a lot of the reviewers have really hit our podcast spot on. And basically, it's this. Look, if it's not your hardcore stats type of breakdown. If you want that, if you want the angry East Coast, you know, listener podcast type, that's not us, man.
What are you?
We live out here. We live out here on the West Coast. We chill on the beach, drink a bunch of beers. I mean, come on, man.
That was my favorite.
That's the podcast.
Like you said, so many people are like, it's like I'm hanging out, drinking beers with my friends, talking football, and like
that's the podcast.
I mean, we're just not drinking beer in the studio, but
right. A lot of listeners picked up on that, and I thought it was spot on. So great. For all right, let's do daily daps.
Wait, what?
You guys aren't drinking beers?
Franchise, shut up.
You don't know what's in this coffee cup, bro.
People that listen to this.
You don't know what's
in
the coffee
cup. Listen to this, bro.
Let's do daily daps.
Oh, no.
Daily daps and get out of here.
Extra, extra, this is the day. Depths and hooks. Give me depths, cause I'll be scribbling right. Give me
dabbing up depths about depths. All right, daily dap time. We're going to start with MG, my guy, Marcus Grant. What's going on?
I'm trying to think of daily daps. Well, one, I do want a daily dap. Football back in Los Angeles. I had a chance to go to the Coliseum on Saturday for Chiefs and Rams in the preseason. And look, I have been to the Coliseum more times than I can count for USC football. Now, mind you, I actually was a freshman at USC for the last year of the Raiders, but I remember looking out my freshman dorm window and seeing the guys in the black hole who would park on campus and walk over to the stadium, and I was like, I'm not going out there. So I never actually went to a pro game in Los Angeles. So to go to the LA Coliseum, look, honestly, understanding the history there and everything, but it was weird to be there and watch a professional football game. There's no band. There's no, like, it's not the same kind of atmosphere as
we need
college.
A band.
But it was wild and it was a lot of fun. And so yeah, daily dabs to that. And a quick, because I'm on this comic book kick right now and I'm overloaded with them. Paper Girls, which is a new one written by Brian K. Vaughan, the same guy who writes Saga. I just read the first volume of it. It just came out not long ago. Very, very interesting. The only way I can really describe it is it's sort of Stranger Things in comic book form with four girls instead of four boys. But first volume was really entertaining, so I look forward to seeing how this story goes.
Brian K. Vaughan also wrote Why the Last Man, which is another good series I'm trying to work my way through. But basically, when it comes to writing comics, He's good. He's good.
That was MG, my guy, Marcus. Franchise, what's up?
Yeah, all right. So I got a daily daps today for a hashtag pal that I met back in the day when I worked at Blue Note Records.
Okay.
His name is Amos Lee.
Is this when you were shady and picked up on your girl?
Humble brag.
Yes.
Wait, we said that. Oh,
correct.
Okay. Perfect.
We said we were correct. So I used to work in the music industry, and I met Amos Lee. He's a singer-songwriter.
Okay.
He dropped a new album last week called Spirit. That's out now. Go buy it. Go support him. He texts me every Sunday morning, 5 minutes before the game starts, and asks me for fantasy football advice.
Yeah,
I'm in a league with him. I'm in a fantasy baseball league with him. He's a great guy. His new album just came out. The title track, Spirit, it gave me chills the first time I heard it. He's got a really cool, unique, soulful voice. Mm. Just a man and his acoustic guitar. He's really great to see live. He's touring this fall. Check out Amos Lee on iTunes, and if you want to go catch a show, his dates are online. So, Amos Lee, what up, buddy?
There you go.
Nice.
This checked all the requisite boxes for a My Pal Humble Brag, for sure.
I'm not that guy, but I mean, I was struggling for adapts, and Amos Lee just fell into my lap.
There you go. WizKid.
So, first off, anti-dep to all the people that somehow think I would just die in the wilderness based on our Twitter.
Oh!
I didn't know we were going to bring that up, but here it is.
I knew I wasn't going to win the poll because Harmon has far and away the most ardent supporters on Twitter.
Rigged.
The Harmonites, dude.
It was rigged.
But my God, the reasonings people put for me dying or Harmon surviving were just asinine.
Sorry. I think you just need to look at the numbers. 45% of the votes went to this guy.
Okay.
What percentage of the votes did you get again?
I finished with what, 13, 14?
13.
Yeah.
Who
me
came
and Marcus,
in second?
Me and Marcus
tied
at 21% for
21%? You came
vote.
In last?
Yeah, I know, right?
Dead
I know.
Last.
Which, in all honesty, I really feel like Gelhar would be the one to survive the longest in the wilderness.
He might. It's a push.
No.
It's not a push.
I like how Charlie was used both as a positive and a negative.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I asked Charlie about the whole situation and everything. He like actually sneezed when I said, like, hey, you think you could help me survive in the wilderness?
It worked out perfectly. He accidentally made that. So that was the first anti-dap. Then the other dap was to, and this is gonna go against the stream of what I just said with me saying I'd live longer in the wilderness.
Yeah.
But I want to give a daily dap to meditation. Because here's why. I took a class on it in college. Like, it was like a one-credit throwaway class. I was like, I'll go sit in quiet for an hour and get a credit for it. Like,
oh,
that's
yeah.
fine. I actually really, like, liked it. And I think there is credence to the practice and the, like, physiological effects that it has on your brain and things.
100% agree.
I was at the barbershop waiting to get in the other week, and I was reading an article about meditation again. So why I'm dapping it today is because I just said to these guys earlier, I was like, man, I feel like I might be getting sick right now. I just feel kind of out of it. And I was like, I haven't left this GD building all day, and I've been staring at my computer grinding. So I, honest to God, when I like stepped away for a few minutes, I went out, I sat in the sun for like 5-10 minutes, just like chilled, focused on my breathing, and I feel worlds better right now.
Wow.
Like, I feel like I got recharged like 25%, no joke.
Wow, that's
if
amazing.
I was a phone battery.
I love
so
it.
if you like, and normally I'm not like a hand-holdy, hippie, you know, kind of crap person like that, give meditation a shot. The thing is, you just focus on your breathing.
Yes.
Whenever your mind waters, just wanders, just come back to your breath. And, like, give it a shot.
Sounds like
the holistic medicine podcast.
Yep.
Sounds like it'd be key to surviving in the wilderness.
It could be. It's a very good point. Look at Harmon smirk right now.
That's why he needed more practice in it
right.
after he got schooled.
All right.
I love it that, like, I don't even know. I wonder, like, what percentage of the audience actually knows what the hell we're talking about.
So there was a poll. I put it on
I don't even
Twitter
know if we really need to explain
Friday, at the end of the day, who would survive longest in the wilderness? I got obliterated. Go to twitter.com/AlexGelhar. You can see the poll.
Right.
And some hilarious responses. Both
that's great.
For other people. And it gets me, like, the chain, if you just click on that and see the replies, is ridiculous.
Yeah.
By the way, Matt Harmon drunk tweeting me. Late at night.
What are you talking about? Drunk tweeting.
Drunk tweeted me at like 11:30 at night and saying James would be 10th on this list.
Excuse me.
Where did that come from?
That is a gross assumption that I was drunk at 11:30. That's a gross assumption.
Rude.
That's not gross.
That's a pretty good assumption.
Nah, but you were.
that's a pretty good assumption.
Oh yeah, I was. That's right.
Right. 11:30 on a Friday night. Rando tweet at James D. Co. would be 10th on this list.
Well,
where did that come from?
Because I saw you posted it on Facebook because you're doing that annoying thing now where it's like all your tweets go to Facebook.
I don't tweet as much as you, pal.
Okay,
I only tweet
no,
like
no, 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 no. Okay. And, well, you don't have a lot of good tweets. That's my point.
Jeez, Harmon.
So I saw that on Facebook.
That is your go-to.
But I didn't want to school you on Facebook because that's really not my forum. So I went to Twitter,
Facebook,
pulled up that tweet, and roasted you there.
Rude.
Roasted. I got roasted. Matt Harmon, give me a tap. this podcast.
Off the rails. We were doing a pretty good job.
We made it so long before it went off the rails. I'm so proud of us.
Not bad, but it's going to go off the rails at some point. So I got two daps. And, sticking with the theme here.
Yeah.
So on Saturday, I've been saying, for, like, the last week, I'd been a little saltier than normal, and Gelhar was saying, like, you seem a little, a little stressed and all that.
Go to the wilderness.
So I needed so I got away for the day. I went up into the Santa Monica Mountains, Escondido Falls, climbed to the top of that bad boy, looked out over the beach and everything, and it was just awesome.
It's an awesome hike.
It really is an awesome hike. It's a lot of fun. I went by myself and just went up there and just, cleared my head. I felt a little bit more centered when I came back down because, I think as you can tell in all of our voices right now, we're heading into the madness that is the NFL season. And as grateful as we are to have our jobs, and we are very grateful, it's a wild time.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing I did on Saturday. And right after that, I went to my favorite nursery in town. Not child nursery, gross, but plant nursery. It's in.
Nobody thought that.
Just wanted to be clear.
Nobody thought that.
I think it's a Japanese nursery on Sawtelle Boulevard, Hashimoto Nursery.
Cool.
Great.
Oh
great.
Sounds legit.
It's very legit. It's a great spot to get. I got some kale seeds. I got some succulents.
Yeah,
I got some
very LA
some flowers.
Our apartment is peak LA right now. He's throwing kale on our balcony. So
yeah, what's up? The Harmon Garden is really expanding. If you want to see pictures of the new stash, just go to my Instagram.
They probably don't.
Matt Harmon _BYB.
I do.
Boy,
thank
young
you.
Boy, young boy. All right. My daily dap is going to go out to a former coworker of mine, John Regendon. He's there in Bakersfield. He's a photographer there. Very hardworking dude. Currently laid up in the hospital right now. Unfortunately, he contracted this rando disease called Valley Fever.
Oh, Valley Fever is no good.
Yeah, it
is no good.
for the most part, there's no cure for Valley Fever. You can die of Valley Fever. There's no exact known cause for Valley Fever, and there's only a few places in the world that you can get it. Bakersfield is one of those places in the world.
Oh, man. It is not good.
Anyways, he's been battling, flu-like, pneumonia-like symptoms for the past couple of weeks, but they finally figured it out, didn't figure it out, but they kind of, process of elimination, figured out that it was Valley Fever, but so now they've got a handle on it. Hopefully he does well, and again, praying for you, pal. Was a great guy. John Regendon was a former coworker of mine there in Bakersfield. I hope and wish for a speedy recovery for you, bud. All right, so there you go. By the way, go to the website, NFL.com/fantasy, for all of your latest fantasy content. For the franchise, for Matt Harmon, for MG and Alex Gelhar, I'm James Coe. We're out.